Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
Without Bethel Winterhouse, to put it bluntly, people will die.
Bethel's emergency shelter could close early this winter without more funding. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Tuesday, November 22nd. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, more and more Alaskans are voting to fire judges.
And it seems to be more of an anti-system vote than anything to do with the judges themselves.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The polls have closed on the November 8th general election. Preliminary results have been released online by the Alaska Division of Elections. Final results will not be posted until Wednesday, November 23rd, giving time for all ballots postmarked by Election Day to be counted, including mail ballots from rural Alaska, from college students in the lower 48, and from Alaskans serving in the military abroad. This message sponsored by Alaskans for Better Elections.
Bethel Winterhouse is the area's only low-barrier emergency shelter. That means anyone over 18 can spend the night there in the winter. And last winter, hundreds of people did just that. But as KYUK's Nina Kravinsky reports, this season they might have to close their doors early due to lack of funding.
It's a freezing November night, and about 25 people are spending it at Bethel Winterhouse. Before they roll out sleeping pads for bed, the emergency overnight shelter's executive director, Jayla Milford, rolls open the cafeteria window.
Okay, dinner is served! Women and elders first!
That's nearly half the people in the room. Dinner tonight is leftover mac and cheese and pork tenderloin. One of the elders in line tells me he stays here regularly. He doesn't want to use his name, but he has a job in Bethel, which he loves. He says he just hasn't been able to save up enough for a place of his own.
I feel real sorry for us homeless people. You know, they suffer a lot.
He says it's hard for him and the other residents to find a place to go once the shelter closes its doors at 7 a.m. It's often well below freezing at that time. He worries not just for himself, but for the other people there with him.
Blowing snow and really cold out there. Honestly, where are they going to go?
Bethel Winterhouse opened for the season in October this year. Milford, the center's executive director, says her goal is to keep the shelter open until the river breaks up in May each year. But the exact date depends on funding. This year, they may have to close as early as February. Without a heated indoor option, conditions that time of year are dangerous.
And so without Bethel Winterhouse, to put it bluntly, people will die.
Since Bethel Winterhouse opened for the season, it's already seen 100 different people come through its doors. Milford estimates that the shelter needs about $150,000 more dollars to keep its doors open. In addition to a warm place to sleep, Bethel Winterhouse offers dinner, showers, and laundry. Last year, more than 300 people came through its doors. Many say on their intake forms that they'd be sleeping outside or in a non-habitable place, like a car, if it weren't for Bethel Winterhouse.
Already, we are seeing people come in and they are frozen from just walking in the times that we are unable to be open.
Bethel Winterhouse gets most of its funding from the city's Community Action Grant, local money that goes to nonprofits. Other sources of funding have been less reliable, Milford says. The organization has struggled to get money from federal grants, which Milford has found tend to go to long-term housing solutions rather than short-term emergency options.
Without us catching them at the bottom, they'll fall through and we'll never be able to get them housing. So we are the first step. And unfortunately, people want to fund the last step and not the first one.
But even as the shelter struggles to keep its doors open this year, it's working on a longer-term solution. The organization received grant money to build a 20-bed long-term housing facility attached to the current shelter. Milford says they're set to break ground in the coming months and complete the project in 2024. Though rent payments will cover many of the building's expenses, the new facility will be reliant on the shelter's staff as it gets underway. Milford said that could be a problem.
As of now, Bethel Winterhouse does not have the resources to take on another multi-million dollar building attached to it.
For now, Bethel Winter House is simply trying to raise enough money to stay open through the cold months. If it doesn't, residents say they're not sure what they'll do. One woman who stays at the shelter every night told me there are cracks around her door at home, and there's no heat.
It's a nice warm place, you know, a place to get out of the cold.
The elder in line for dinner says he'd like a place of his own by the time the shelter closes for the season. But he's not sure that's possible.
And if I don't, it's a very hard question for me to answer. I can't think about the future, you know. Today is today. And tomorrow, I know I'm going to go to work. But other than that, I can't think about the future.
If this place closes, he's not sure where he'll go. In Bethel, I'm Nina Kravinsky.
All 29 of the Alaska judges up for retention elections this year are on track to secure another term. That's pretty normal. Only 6 judges have ever lost a retention election in the entire history of the state. But over the decades, more Alaskans have been voting against letting state judges keep their jobs. As Alaska Public Media's Jeremy Shea reports, the trend suggests lots of qualified judges could be ousted in future elections, creating huge headaches in the justice system.
Most Alaskans vote like Teresa Cortez of South Anchorage.
Oh, yeah, I don't know any of the judges. So I normally vote yes for all of them. Unless there's one that stands out that I, you know, that I've heard bad things from, then I don't vote.
But election results over several decades show a growing minority of Alaskans vote like Richard Ziggy Zeigler of downtown Anchorage.
Oh, I voted no for every one of them.
Yeah, and tell me why.
Why? Because I like fresh blood and because I think that we do need a turnover when it comes to judges.
He says he thinks judges burn out and lose their compassion over time.
Well, did you do any research?
Judges were on the back of that damn thing.
For Zeigler and most other Alaskans, it was 20 this year. Zeigler lives in the 3rd Judicial District, which includes Anchorage, Matsu, the Kenai Peninsula, Kodiak, Bristol Bay, and the Aleutians. Unofficial results from this year's election show that judges in this population-heavy district were all retained, as usual, but by the narrowest margins in the state, in a state with the lowest margins in the nation. Statewide, judges' median approval rating is going to hit a record low this year. Most judges will be retained with less than 60% of the vote. What's harder to nail down is why more and more Alaskans are voting to fire judges. Political campaigns, pollsters, and the media tend to focus on the races at the top of the ballot. Here's statistician and researcher Albert Clamp.
It's a very uniquely Alaskan thing.
Clamp lives in Chicago, but he studies and tracks judicial retention elections nationwide.
And it seems to be more of an anti-system vote than anything to do with the judges themselves.
The judges this year, and in years past with few exceptions, got positive professional evaluations and recommendations from the Alaska Judicial Council. The nonpartisan council recommended retaining all of the judges on the ballot this year. Clamp got interested in researching Alaska several years ago because there was concern in the legal community, especially in Anchorage.
Rates had been dropping over time and were approaching a level where it might be possible that an entire slate of judges could be wiped off the ballot by just a blanket no vote from enough people.
These judges make life-altering decisions on everything from crime and punishment to child custody to mundane traffic violations and property disputes. Clamp's research makes it easy to compare Alaska to other states. And Alaska doesn't track with other politically conservative states, which tend to have the highest approval ratings for their judges. He says South Dakota, Utah, Wyoming, and Montana have some of the highest judicial approval ratings in the nation.
Those are not places that are, you know, teeming with social justice warriors. Those are very staunchly conservative places, and yet they support their judges at very high rates, even more than some more balanced or democratic states.
One thing that does stick out to Clamp in Alaska is the push to rewrite the state constitution so Alaskans have a more direct role in picking judges. He thinks that campaign, partially embodied by the constitutional convention question this year, may have driven more people to vote against retaining judges than normal. Some justice system experts speculate that differences in Alaskans' political preferences over time and geography are behind the voting patterns. South Central is more conservative than the rest of the state, and some social conservatives have maligned Alaska's judicial selection and retention system. This year, the head of the Alaska Family Council urged Alaskans to vote against retaining all of the judges. He thinks the judiciary doesn't reflect the state's conservative lean. But if he got his way...
Well, I think it would wreak havoc in the system.
That's Michael Garrity. He was Alaska's attorney general during Republican Governor Sean Parnell's administration, and he wrote a column in the Anchorage Daily News before the election about judicial retention. He called blindly voting no on all judges extreme and urged voters to at least make informed decisions. Suzanne DiPietro is the executive director of the Judicial Council. In addition to the evaluations for retention, the council vets potential judges and sends a short list to the governor for appointments. DiPietro says the council's process is thorough and detailed. But what if they had to go through that for dozens of potential judges at the same time?
It would just be extremely difficult, I mean, really impossible for the council to replace large numbers of judges quickly. A scenario like that certainly was not contemplated by the founders.
DiPietro did have an apolitical theory about the geographic disparity. The voters in the 3rd Judicial District are just a lot less likely to have a personal connection to the judges on their ballots.
I have wondered if that could be a dynamic that happens in the smaller communities where people are just closer to the courts and to the judges in the community, and they know the judges as people.
That contrast was on display recently during a public hearing the Judicial Council held at a courthouse in downtown Anchorage about applicants for 2 openings on the Anchorage Superior Court. The courtroom was nearly empty. Alaska Supreme Court Justice Daniel Winfrey, who presides over the Judicial Council, thanked the few people who did participate.
We appreciate it. It's always nice to hear people come in and chat, particularly in Anchorage, where that doesn't happen all the time.
DiPietro says in smaller communities, the public packs the room for these types of hearings. In Anchorage, I'm Jeremy Shea.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a battle over LGBTQ-themed books in the Homer Library.
There's a little kid somewhere in your kid's classroom that feels alone and that doesn't have a book that looks like them.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska Pacific University offers degree-seeking students the opportunity to receive donor-funded scholarships, grants, and other financial aid. Apply for admission to be automatically considered for most scholarships. Complete financial aid applications by priority deadlines to receive optimal consideration. Financial aid counselors are available to assist. Learn more at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University.
A state court judge has dismissed as procedurally flawed a lawsuit challenging the eligibility of an Alaska legislative candidate to hold the seat. The lawsuit filed late last month alleges that Democrat Jennifer Armstrong did not meet residency requirements on the date she filed to run for an Anchorage House seat. Armstrong was leading Republican Liz Vasquez in the November 8th election. Superior Court Judge Herman Walker Jr. cited state law and regulations that say a challenge to a candidate's eligibility can be made by the 10th day after the filing deadline or once the election results have been certified. The filing deadline was in June. State elections officials have targeted November 29th to certify the general election. A contentious battle over books is playing out in Homer. Homer's Library Advisory Board is deciding what to do with more than 50 children's books with LGBTQ themes. Some residents say inclusivity is important and they want the books to stay, while others want them removed completely. KBBI's Desiree Hagen reports.
A standing room only crowd of over 100 people packed into Homer City Hall last Tuesday for a marathon meeting of the Library Advisory Board. Around 6 dozen people gave public testimony, clocking the meeting at over 4 hours. At the center of the debate was whether the Homer Public Library Advisory Board should uphold a decision made by Library Director Dave Barry in early July. At that time, Barry chose to reject a request from petitioners who wanted certain LGBTQ titles to be moved from the children's wing to separate sections of the library or removed entirely.
We're asking that LGBTQ books, and the way we're defining LGBTQ books is books that have been marketed as such. So those books be moved into a section outside of that sectioned off area for the children when you go in the library. We don't want it in there.
That's Madeline Veldstra. She is a mother and children's author. Veldstra and other community members say they're afraid children might inadvertently stumble across the, quote, confusing ideas in these books. After the group's request was rejected by Library Director Barry in early July, Veldstra and others filed the petition with the city clerk's office to appeal his decision. The list is now being reviewed by the full Library Advisory Board. The 7-member board has the final decision on whether the books stay or go. Most of the titles Veldstra's group once moved present stories with different family structures, like adopted families that have two dads, for example. Others talk about the history of various LGBTQ figures, like artist Keith Haring or politician Harvey Milk, or mention themes around drag. Other books are more conceptual, like the book Red, which is about a blue crayon that doesn't fit in. Barry says the Homer Library vets their children's collection using common sources and standards that libraries across the country adhere to.
We definitely look for reviews in our trusted sources, and everything that we have on the list here is commonly held in a lot of other libraries as well.
Both Barry and former Homer Public Library Director Ann Dixon say backlash from groups targeting libraries that provide LGBTQ material is a trend happening nationwide. Earlier this summer in Ketchikan, a city council member tried to cancel a drag queen story time at the public library.
Every parent in this room should be looking at those books as an opportunity.
Back at the Library Advisory Board meeting, emotions are running high. Those who want the LGBTQ material to remain in the children's section outnumbered the petitioners about 2-1. Many of those who favor segregating the books are parents or grandparents concerned about what they call sexual themes in some of the titles. Some, such as Dave Becker, evoke Christianity in their justifications.
I think I'd like to address the elephant in the room, which is this is a spiritual matter. What you are seeing here is a spiritual war.
Defenders of the library's policy who want the books to remain in the children's collection emphasize the value of inclusivity. They say by singling out or segregating these books to their own section, the library would be sending a message to LGBTQ patrons that they are not welcome. Lindsay Martin is an LGBTQ ally. She comes from an adopted family and relates to being different.
I do remember as a kid not finding books that looked like me. And wanting so badly to be normal, and wanting so badly to find my family in the books. I'm just asking you to see that there's a little kid somewhere in your kid's classroom that feels alone and that doesn't have a book that looks like them.
The Library Advisory Board is set to make a decision at their next meeting in the new year. The public can submit written testimony before the meeting or testify in person on January 17th. In Homer, I'm Desiree Hagen.
A black bear cub euthanized at Glacier Bay National Park this fall is the first in the country to test positive for a highly contagious strain of bird flu. As KRBD's Reagan Miller reports, park visitors alerted wildlife officials after they noticed the cub's strange behavior.
A cub was having a hard time walking and struggled to keep up with its two siblings and mother at Bartlett Cove in Glacier Bay National Park. Kimberly Beckman is a wildlife veterinarian for the state's Department of Fish and Game. She says concerned park visitors captured videos of the cub in October.
They saw the bear cub. They thought it was drunk. It was stumbling and then was abandoned by the mothers.
Those symptoms are common with the strain, also called H5N1. It causes exhaustion and neurological problems like seizures. Beckman says the bear had no chance of survival at that point.
It was very sad to see the animal's not going to recover. Its brain was swollen, and it would have died probably within hours had it not been euthanized.
After euthanizing the cub, scientists took swabs and a sample of the bear's brain to test for rabies and canine distemper. They sent the samples to labs in Washington and New York for analysis. Beckman says the results came back positive for the strain of flu known as highly pathogenic avian influenza, or HIPATH AI for short.
Test all wildlife that die with clinical signs or that are suspicious of having inflammation of the brain, encephalitis for rabies. And we had to do the rabies testing on this animal before we could test it for high-path AI because of the risk from the tissues if it was infected with rabies.
It's the first time the strain has been spotted in an Alaska bear. Wildlife officials say two foxes have also tested positive this year, one in Unalaska and one in Unalaklet. Beckman says the cub found at Bartlett Cove was likely infected after scavenging a sick or dead bird.
They have to inhale a large dose or, you know, while they're scavenging an infected bird, then get that virus laden into their respiratory passages. So it does not go bear to bear.
Animals can also become infected by the virus by ingesting water that has been contaminated by sick waterfowl. She says the risk to humans is very low. Just 4 people have tested positive for the H5N1 flu worldwide, and just 1 in North America. But the virus has devastated poultry and wild birds. Nearly 50 million have been killed or euthanized this year alone, according to the CDC. In Alaska, wildlife officials say the Matanuska-Susitna burrow is still a hotspot for infections among backyard flocks. Beckman also says Sitka has recently seen infections among eagles. Fish and Game also reported infections among shorebirds, ravens, and waterfowl statewide this summer. Wildlife officials say residents should report sick, orphaned, or dead animals to the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, maintaining and operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for 45 years. More at alyeskapipeline.com.
Sneezing, aching, sweating, and coughing. Who has the time for this misery? You have the power to protect yourself and your community. Boost your defenses this season by getting the flu vaccine. Protect yourself and family. Learn more at vaccinate.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
Residents of the Matanuska-Susitna burrow will be getting a lot more power from the sun next summer. That's when construction is expected to finish in Houston on what will be the state's largest solar farm, projected to produce enough energy to power 1,400 homes. Late last month, the state-owned Alaska Energy Authority agreed to loan $4.9 million to the project. Curtis Thayer is executive director at AEA and says renewables like solar help offset Rail Belt communities' reliance on natural gas. Thayer says it is the goal of the state and the governor to reduce carbon emissions, but that won't happen overnight.
You're never going to be able to do everything on wind, everything on solar, you know, or hydro. There needs to be a balance. And so that balance, as technology advances, then hopefully we can wean ourselves off of the carbon and do that. But that's going to be a bridge.
Thayer says the added renewable power will not raise costs for consumers and will actually stabilize their rates, especially in the long term. That's possible because the price of solar has fallen rapidly in recent years, dropping 80 to 90% over the last decade, according to Jen Miller, CEO of Renewable IPP. 3 years ago, Renewable IPP built what is currently the biggest solar farm in Alaska, next to the park's highway in Willow. Now, Miller's company is developing the Houston project just down the highway, and it's set to be 6 times bigger. The panels are two-sided, optimizing their winter production.
And so when February, March, and the sunny, you know, we have a lot of sunny, nice days during that time as well, we'll be able to capture extra production as it bounces off the snow and hits the backside of the panel.
Alaska currently gets less than 1% of its power from solar, but Miller says that as the technology continues to improve, that number could grow to 25% or higher. The Houston project is on track to be completed by August 2023. Frosty evening with the mercury at 32 degrees did not put a damper on the fun at Ketchikan City Park this past weekend. As KRBD's Maria Dudzak reports, more than 2 dozen kids went in search of paper turkeys during the community's annual turkey hunt.
Are you guys pre-registered?
Yes.
Yes. Last names?
Jenkins.
Jenkins, Robbie, and Stoney?
Yep.
Despite the cold, spirits were high and participants were excited to get started.
Some 28 children, birth to age 12, participated in the event, along with their families and friends. New to the turkey hunt was little Lysander Heffley and his parents, James and Miranda. The family moved to Ketchikan earlier this year.
I am really excited, mostly because Thanksgiving is one of our favorite holidays, and we want to see our baby just involved early and out doing things and, I don't know, making memories.
And how old is Lysander?
Lysander's 10 months.
So yeah. This definitely is his first turkey.
Yes. But he's dressed for the part. His little turkey pants and a little turkey tie.
Jess Beach and her kids, Chloe, Charlie, and Autumn, were also new to the turkey hunt. 11-year-old Chloe shared her strategy.
I was thinking, like, maybe I could just, like use a flashlight, and if something looks different on the trees or something, I could look there.
7-year-old Charlie had a similar plan.
If something looks, like, different, I'll just look even closer and see if it's a part of the turkey. Because I have my brain, and I know a really good strategy to hunt for turkeys.
Erin Brooks of Parks and Recreation explained the rules.
Please go slow across the rock, the walkways and the bridges. Every participant can grab 8 turkeys, okay? When you are done grabbing your 8 turkeys, bring them back to the table and we will exchange it for a goodie bag. Once everybody is back on this side of the park, we will draw for the raffle prizes.
Then families combed the park, seeking small, laminated paper turkeys.
I found another one.
Uh-oh.
Oh, little boy took it.
Great.
Yeah, this one. Oh, no, there's another one over here. Autumn, look. Look right here.
It didn't take long. Just 10 minutes after the event kicked off, the kids turned their turkeys in for goodie bags. Then came the drawings. Lysander Heffley, Grady O'Brien, Robbie Jenkins, and Charlie Beach each won their very own real frozen turkey.
Do you want me to yell?
Charlie Beach.
Oh, that's Charlie you. Beach.
You got a turkey.
Yay. Is that you?
Uh-huh. Okay, you
can
see the turkey.
You get a turkey.
Oh, awesome. We haven't bought one yet. That's amazing.
After the awards were handed out, everyone headed home to enjoy their prizes and to get ready for the Thanksgiving holiday and strategize for next year's hunt.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
In Ketchikan, I'm Maria Dudzak.
The candy cane hunt will be in December. Watch the brochure for announcements.
Thank you guys so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Nina Kravinsky in Bethel, Jeremy Shea and Michael Finelli in Anchorage, Desiree Hagen in Homer, and Reagan Miller and Maria Dudzak in Ketchikan. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Katie Anastas is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
The polls have closed on the November 8th general election. Preliminary results have been released online by the Alaska Division of Elections. Final results will not be posted until Wednesday, November 23rd, giving time for all ballots postmarked by Election Day to be counted, including mail ballots from rural Alaska, from college students in the lower 48, and from Alaskans serving in the military abroad. This message sponsored by Alaskans for Better Elections.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.